Character 1. You who lost your career. You are a person who found your life's passion in your sport early on, with help, support, and maybe a few too many expectations from your parents. You are young and have finished high school at a sports college. It took you 4 years to get your diploma because there needed to be enough time for your sport. You thrived and had fun. You were blissfully content and thoroughly enjoyed your fellow teammates. The community was intoxicating. You were the center of this community because not only were you a prodigy in your field, but you were likable and kept the team spirit high. You have always been able to feel how others are and what they need, but you have never been good at understanding what you need. Background. Your sport has always been your main priority, your honor and your pride. You were really good and you trained many times a week. You enjoyed it. Not only did it make you break a sweat, but you achieved something new every day. You became stronger with each day and it made you dream of your future. Your sport was your happiness and a big part of your identity. That's why the accident hurt twice as much. 1 week skiing, 3 weeks in the hospital, 2 operations, and now you can't endure enjoying your sport for an hour without it hurting too much. Damned snowboards. It's been 4 years since the accident, and in the beginning you received professional help because the wise doctors foresaw a crisis. And it went as they foresaw. You broke and you took out all your anger on the world around you, but you got through it. You were as angry as you had ever been, and your injury was no one's and everyone's fault. But you hated yourself most of all, because you went on that trip. Your sport requires functionality in both knees. Damn it all. You should have been wiser. Everyone, or at least the majority, of athletes who have ruined their career has done so skiing. But you thought you knew better back then. How bad could it go? You needed to remember to live a little, and you needed to enjoy life like people your own age. You shouldn't only socialize during sport, but you should have known better. You are still angry at the world and those who try to tell you that you can still do many other things or nothing is as bad as it seems have obviously not lost their dreams. Jerks who think they understand you, damned hobby sports people. They have no idea what it means to put all your eggs in one basket. You were brave. You were rocking it. You were good and you will never get that back. Yes, your social circle was your teammates, and the sport continued for them. Their careers continued, and because yours couldn't, they slipped away from you. It's been 4 years now, but it feels like a lot more. You are in need of a community that understands you, and therefore your parents suggested this self-help group A Way Through, which should be really good. You don't know anyone who has been through what you have, but maybe it could be good for you to meet others who might know. Maybe it would even make you feel seen. The core of your grief or loss. The loss of community and career because of a skiing accident, and you know no one who understands your pain. Basically, you don't want to be part of any other communities. You had everything exactly as you wanted it, and you lost it. Coping mechanisms, evasion. Your first coping mechanism is avoid talking about the accident. You don't like talking about the accident, mainly because you are convinced that you could have prevented it. The sun was low and you didn't see the fallen tree trunk. You knew that you shouldn't be snowboarding in deep snow and you actually did reconsider, but it was thrilling. The adrenaline, snow halfway up your shin. You were certain you would make it. What was the worst thing that could happen? No, you find it really hard to talk about and often use sentences like, anyway, it's hard to explain, or can we talk about something else, just to get away from the subject. Your second coping mechanism is changing hobbies. You have, since you moved back home to your parents, spent your time on finding new hobbies. It's not the same, far from it, and you change from one hobby to the other continuously. One moment you collect branches to decorate your room, and in the next you play computer games, and shortly after that you use all your energy on procuring an aquarium big enough for 4 tortoises that you noticed were for sale on Marketplace. You feel how talking about these hobbies gives you a shred of joy, and it keeps your head occupied from thinking about the loss. Use this time in the self-help group to talk about your hobby and why it's so very interesting. Your third coping mechanism is talk about someone else. You like talking about others' problems. It gives you a peace of mind and calms you, because it's a way to distance yourself from yourself and to focus on others. And people like talking about themselves, so in way too many instances, it has proven to be an effective technique. Ask questions like, oh, tell me more, that sounds interesting or sad, or what happened next, or how did you feel about that? Answer these questions in your head before going in-game. What is your name? What is your elite sport? It needs to be physical and involve team spirit. What feeling rummages in you as you walk through the door to the self-help group for the first time? Character 2, you who walk the path not chosen. For as long as you can remember, you have always been your parents' little star. The adjective little fell away with time, but you are still your parents' pride, and it is always highlighted during family gatherings how fantastic and amazing you are, and how happy they are for your success. But it doesn't sit with you, because you have never chosen this path for yourself, and you are slowly getting sick and tired of the fact that you can't get out. You can't continue doing something you don't like doing. There has never been a moment where your time hasn't been managed and regulated, and you know more about scheduling, motivation, and priorities than you know what it means to be a child on the playground or hanging with your friends, or generally what it means to have spare time. Your parents are more like secretaries and coaches. Background. You only have fleeting relations, and the whole concept of having a childhood friend or a best friend is something you know nothing about. You have never had the time to immerse yourself in getting to know another person well unless they share your talent. You are in your early 20s, and your time in high school is long over. You took the longer road to your diploma just to be sure you had time to practice 6 times per week, and you often said no thanks to invitations to parties or events. And sometimes, when you really wanted to go, you checked with your parents, but they usually said no. Your parents have kept eyes on the grand perspective of your life, and it started almost before you can really remember. Your father is a world-renowned star, and when you began to walk in his footsteps, it filled you with happiness and pride. One thing led to another, and when you won the first trophy, it was monumental. The next trophy, a triumph. But at the third trophy, in your young heart, you could sense it was expected of you. Of course you win. You are a winner. You must be a winner. During your childhood, you have had many short birthdays, and the calories and the sugar intake has been monitored. And thank heavens, because if you ate 2 slices of cake, you would get sick, and the scolding that followed because you were not on top of your game would linger in you for days. But this scolding would motivate you to do better, to become better, learn faster, and make your parents proud. The years went by, you have won more prizes than your acquaintances have drunk beers. You have more trophies than any child you know, but your parents have started to change their attitude towards you. What used to be, this you will learn when you get older, has become, God damn it, you should already know this by now. It hurts that you can't live up to their expectations, and you are starting to see your results have worsened. You are slowly making your way down the ladder, but paradoxically, it's not because you're bad. Far from it. You're just not good enough, and being here in this self-help group is already a waste of time. The only reason why you made it to that meeting is because your friend Marjorie, your colleague and friend, has made you go. You must also remember to train and stretch your mind, she has often said. Your parents do not know you're here. And it must remain that way. And you don't even know if this is going to help, but you remember that one time the team had a round of talking and speaking your minds, where you could open up about your insecurities, and it was fucking awesome. It was like that sugary treat you knew you were not allowed. Simply amazing. The core of your grief or loss. You cannot keep up and you are about to lose what you have. You cannot talk to anyone about it and you lack the motivation to continue your sport. You will never be a gold medal winner again. Coping mechanisms, anger and escapism. Your first coping mechanism is people are stupid. What do people even know about being an elite athlete? Maybe they should keep the ball on their side of the playing field and ask questions instead of telling you how you should feel about something or how you should think. What the hell do you know about it? Is a good sentence to counter any well-intentioned, arrogant comment from people trying to help. Do you have experience with that? Is almost as good. It really shows the people how stupid they are. Your second coping mechanism, training becomes scrolling TikTok. There are moments where you don't train for as long as your parents would want you to. You go to the gym, sure enough, but after 2 hours you find yourself sitting down surfing TikTok on your phone. There are so many small, stupid clips that can make you smile, and it just feels good to get a breather, you know? You get a break from thinking about all the things you are expected to achieve. It feels nice to just be. I am having fun. Is that so bad? Is a phrase that you use to justify your bad habit. Your third coping mechanism is, you never chose to become a star. You never got to choose if you wanted to invest your time in the sport you do. You ended up doing it because your father was a star, and you continued because it was expected of you. How can your father be so blind and not realize you are living his dream? You have your own life to think about. You have decided to use the self-help group to complain vigorously about your father's selfish way of being a parent. Answer these questions in your head before going in-game. What is your name? What is your elite sport? What feeling rummages in you as you walk through the door to the self-help group for the first time? Character 3. You who got left behind. You are a person who has always known what you wanted and who you wanted it with. You were a person who acted, you were ambitious, and those were your strengths. You really liked that side of yourself, and lucky for you, your partner found those qualities admirable as well. You were together 14 years before your lives went in different directions. Your separation was riddled with fights, and it was quite a painful process to move away from each other, but you got through it and so did your ex. That you got through it was the only good thing that happened in a while, and you still have 1,000 words you want to vocalize about that part of your life. Recently, you lost your job, not more than 3 months ago. There was no longer a need for you, and the company had to let you go to save money. But why did it have to be you they let go? It's just not fair. You reasoned that someone had to get fired, but why did it have to be you? You were so certain you actually meant something to the company. Why is bad luck just following you around? You have gotten 7 months of severance pay, so you have little over half a year to find yourself again, whatever that means. You are who you are, and that person is obviously not good enough for keeping or sharing a life with. It's been a couple of months since you got fired, but you have started the process of working through the myriads of emotions inside you, and you find that it might not be as easy as you thought. The breakup haunts you, and the loss of your work has left you insecure. Who are you now without your job and your partner? What's your identity? Background. You met your ex in a park where you and some of your friends were throwing around a frisbee. You saw them looking your way and planned on boasting and showing off a bit, so you threw the frisbee extra hard and it hovered right over the park's fence, out into the streets and got run over by a truck. Your friends were pretty annoyed by your presentation, but they quickly pieced together the love puzzle and forgave you instantly. It was apparent that you would be together forever. Your ex and you used a lot of time on defining and building your lives, but something always irritated you, and it was the ever-looming presence of your in-laws. They were always butting in and always against your ideas. A summer cabin? No, 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 way too expensive. A dog? You will be exhausted by a pet. A new car? Can you afford a new car? Nothing was ever good enough, and the mere thought of them makes your anger stir within you. They always wanted to show off they were better and make sure that you two had a handle on things, just to be sure. Your favorite example is when your ex and you bought a house. You had to explain to them that they weren't allowed to come along for the tour and see the house for the first time. It was to be you and your ex's home, not theirs. The in-laws were very offended and didn't call you for 2 months. It was actually really nice with some peace and quiet. You started your career by being nobody of importance and easy to ignore, but you got better and more skilled as you were stubborn and diligent, and the support from your partner helped a great deal. Now you are a jobless nobody, single and alone. You live in an apartment and you eat fast food because why bother? You feel like a loser, so why give a damn? You know, it was fun cooking dinner when you were more than just you. Cooking food for yourself is just a hassle and it seems like a waste of time. Most nights, you sit in front of the TV and disgruntled, you yell at the news anchors or incompetent hosts on the silver screen that a monkey could do their jobs better. You could do it better. What a bunch of amateurs this world has come to. What a joke. You do understand why you are part of the self-help group, but you keep telling yourself that everything's going to be okay. You've got it all under control, and you wouldn't have come if you hadn't promised your close friends to give this group a chance. But hey, if it doesn't work, it's not your fault, okay? The core of your grief or loss. Uncertainty about the future. You had it all, and you lost it because others meddled in your affairs. Coping mechanisms, distancing and blaming others. Your first coping mechanism is, everything's going to be okay, it just takes time. You have a core conviction that everything is going to sort itself out. Many before you have lost their job and partner, and they still got a good life and good careers. Everything's going to be fine if people just gave you some space. In the self-help group, you are going to use your time to argue that time heals all wounds. Even in darkness, there's a light, as the phrase goes. It just doesn't feel like that sometimes. Your second coping mechanism is wishful thinking. If only is a sentence you use quite often to explain why injustice befell you. If only those nosy in-laws hadn't ruined your relationship. If only your ex had understood that the relationship would get better again. If only things were different. Your third coping mechanism is changing your mind and cancelling. You often sign up for things or accept offers to socialize, and then when the day comes, you cancel because energy is low or you are overwhelmed. And almost instantly you get annoyed at yourself for cancelling, but you had to. It couldn't have been any other way. People have to understand that. There is nothing wrong with you for cancelling. People do that more and more. You're not the only one. And cancelling is actually a way of prioritizing your health. That's a good thing. People need to accept this fact. In the self-help group, this will present itself as you accepting an offer of something and bailing on it. Something came up is a good excuse, even though the thing that got in the way was you. Answer these questions in your head before going in-game. What is your name? What job did you get fired from? What feeling rummages in you as you walk through the door to the self-help group for the first time? Character 4. You who have always been an outsider. You often use your time in big gatherings or get-togethers to observe and guess what made people say or do as they do. Emotions are intriguing, but they are complex, because a smile can mean sincere happiness, but also be used to hide pain. It's actually fascinating how much a person can lie to themselves. You have always kept an eye on people, and started when you were a child, and never have you used that skill to perceive yourself and look inward, mainly because you're content with who you are. You are an introverted, happy person who has found their place in life on the periphery of friendships and social constellations. But lately, you've started asking yourself this question, is it good enough? Background. You're in your late 20s. Life has treated you fairly well. Your work is fine and yields the level of socializing you need, sometimes a bit too much, and if you could choose, you would be just fine with a book at home or going for long walks by yourself with noise-canceling headphones. You enjoy stimulation and sensations, but on your terms, and lately you've realized you say no thank you instead of see you there to friends' invitations. It has always been this way, but you've also noticed the time between invitations has increased, and even family gatherings have become a thing you hear about after it happened. Why weren't you at your cousin's birthday party? Could be a question, and the answer is quite simply, you hadn't heard about it. They had forgotten to invite you. It's tough being you right now, because life is bustling away at top speed, but you are not part of it. Your friends become parents or get married, some find new sides of themselves on adventures and trips, or become who they feel like they always were trying to be. You want that too, but every time you look in the mirror, you see nothing you want to change. Not really, at least. There are imperfections to your person, but none grave or cruel. And even though you feel content, there is something you want to change. Something just beneath the surface that keeps rearing its head. A question, why aren't you enough? What on earth are you to do? This is so confusing. You heard about the self-help group A Way Through from an acquaintance who used this group to work through their identity crisis and insecurities about their future. Your acquaintance has become radiant and confident, and compared to her, you have realized you're a dull, grey wall in a 70s flowery-infested tapestry. You need to be radiant. Fudge, why hadn't you seen this before? You're actually boring. There is nothing about you that says adventure or surprise. You have a routine, your daily meals, your known rhythm, and just 6 months ago you were content and happy with this. Now you have become annoyed by this, but the true fear is, can you change it? And if so, how? You thought you were content. You are content, or are you? Gosh, this is so confusing. The core of your grief or loss. You are easy to exclude. People don't include you because you are too much yourself. If you are to have close relations, you need to be less yourself. You are not good enough as you are. Coping mechanisms. Perspective shifting. Your first coping mechanism is huge gratitude. You have everything you need, so you should stop dreaming about more. It's spoiled that what you have isn't enough. No one can demand more without being greedy, and if there's one thing you aren't, that's greedy. I am content, really, is something you often say without actually meaning it. Your second coping mechanism is pleaser. The easiest way to be of value is to help others. So whatever needs fixing or a helping hand, you offer it gladly. Does anyone need a cup of coffee? Maybe a tissue. You'll get it, so others don't have to burden themselves with getting up. Let me do it, you often interrupt when someone is going to do something. Your third coping mechanism is doubts. Ask questions. You have used your life to scan and better understand situations and people, but right now you're at a crossroads that just doesn't make sense. There is no correct answer, it seems, and you find yourself asking a lot of questions to be sure. Otherwise, perhaps you'll misunderstand what has just been said. I understand it like this. Is that correct? Is a sentence you use to make sure that you are not stupid. Wow, that's an ugly thought. Answer these questions in your head before going in-game. What is your name? What is something you can never make a choice about? What feeling rummages in you as you walk through the door to the self-help group for the first time? Character 5. You who live cautiously. You have always been on top of things, decisions, and consequences. It could be that you think things through too much or worry a bit too much, but to you, why is not of any concern. The main thing is you have lived 40 years being the smartest person in the room, because you are good at anticipating and understanding what will happen if you do something. You've had a good life up until now, because you've been cautious and weighed your options. That's not a bad thing, is it? You have never taken a risk. You have made tough decisions and gambled with an outcome, but only when both outcomes were in your interests. Risk is something that can, in worst cases, kill you, and risk most commonly ends in debt and discomfort. That's why one has to think things through. Why risk something when it could have been avoided with a bit of common sense? Background. You have spent 40 years on this planet, and you are slowly getting to the point where you are worried and restless, even though you have nothing to worry about, it seems. Your job is good, well paid, your partner loves you and supports you, and your oldest child is enjoying a year at a boarding school. Generally, you are pretty well off. But you have chosen to attend the self-help group A Way Through because things just don't feel right. There is something wrong. You can feel it, but you don't know what. There is a shred of you that yearns and screams for more, something else, and you've heard self-help groups are less dangerous or invasive than psychologists or cognitive therapy. No thank you to the dangerous stuff. So you've decided to dip your toes gently in the font of self-help to see if that helps you to some rest. Because this restlessness makes you uneasy, and uneasiness makes you restless and worried, and worry makes you uneasy, your partner has started to treat you more roughly, and when you answer her, she takes it as you talking back. You've started fighting a bit, and that doesn't feel good at all. Well, generally, your life is good, but it doesn't feel good, you know. And if this self-help thing is not working, at least it's a break from home. You can relax here. Actually, you've tried to step through the door to A Way Through quite a few times, but have always changed your mind at the last moment. You've turned around, went to your car, and driven home and watched a movie with your partner instead. That seemed like a good fix at that time. Your work is your salvation right now, because you're skilled and it makes you feel good, and you love it when your boss compliments your work. The compliments have gotten rarer and rarer, though, so you have taken it upon yourself to ask the questions, is this good enough? Or, what do you think about this? And the answer have never hurt you directly, but your boss's comments used to be, I really, really like this. And now they are not so invested words like, that looks decent, or I'm not against it, have fun with it. You find yourself at the door to A Way Through once more, and are about to turn back. You really don't want to go in there, because what if it uncovers something about you that you don't like? That would mean you were wrong about who you are, and what happens then? The thought of change scares you. The core of your grief or loss. You regret not being braver because it means you are a coward. Additionally, you won't get the time back you wasted. You were sensible and missed out on life. Coping mechanisms, deception. Your first coping mechanism is afraid of conflict. It must never be your mistake. You remember vividly a couple of years ago when your boss scolded you for a disaster that was your fault. You had made the wrong decision. You had been tired after a long night with a sick child. Come on, anyone could see you weren't bringing your A game, so for your boss to snap at you in such a way was unfair. You hate the words, it is your fault. Yeah, yeah, it wasn't on purpose, is a sentence you use often to avoid conflict. It seems people get annoyed with you because of it, and that just adds to the discomfort. Your second coping mechanism is lies. During the last decade, you have developed a bad habit of telling half-truths, and during the last year, this has turned into full-blown lying, to cover up that you don't feel like a particularly interesting person. Of course you were at the premiere, and you understand this particular topic that you have no idea about. You have experience with it. Of course you have. No, you don't. But you're not all bad. You hate when you lie and feel ashamed. In the self-help group, this will manifest itself as you saying something, then changing what you said a couple of times until it doesn't make sense. End this lie with, "And that's how it is." Your third coping mechanism is stubbornness. Even when you are in doubt if you are doing a good enough job, if you fake it, people will believe it 95% of the time. "That's just how it is a sentence that you can answer most questions, and it stops people from asking more or prying into the answer. If that is how it is, then that's all there is to say about something. "That's how it has always been" is another good sentence to shut someone up. Use these sentences to make people stop asking you questions in the self-help group. Answer these questions in your head before going in-game. What is your name? Where are you most comfortable? What feeling rummages in you as you walk through the door to the self-help group for the first time? Character 6. You who chose wrong. You have made a lot of decisions in your life, and you know some choices are more important than others. That's why the act of thinking it through is crucial. But you also harbor the conviction that one can think too much. If one thinks too long, the answer always ends up negatively, or the opportunity has passed you by. That's your experience, at least, because it happened to you while you attended the first year of university. You had an extraordinary chance, but you thought it over too much. The regret burns like cinders in your stomach, and no matter how you think about it, daydream and hope, you will never have an antidote for your regret. You cannot go back in time. You cannot be as smart as you are today in the past, and it's really exhausting and hard for you. It's not okay that some choices in life cannot be changed. It sucks so much, and if there's a divine power, you condemn this entity for having made you so insecure. Background. There was this time when you flirted aggressively with a stranger. You were both riddled with wanderlust, this person more than you, it seemed, because before the night was over, they had offered you something as mind-boggling as a trip around the globe. You only had to show up at Esbjerg Harbor the following Friday, and this trip would be yours. You hadn't even known each other for 8 hours, and you were taken aback by this. You two were flirting, yes, but you didn't know this person at all, so you respectfully declined. Weeks and months at sea with a stranger, even though the person was handsome and sexy in your opinion, the thought of traveling around the globe with a stranger wasn't that compelling. Imagine if you got sick of each other in the middle of the ocean. No thanks, that would have been awful. But on the other hand, you two were flirting and enjoyed each other's company. You would have gotten to know them quite well in that time. The adventure would have been the center of many a talk, and even if you had ended up going your separate ways, you would have been a wonderful experience richer. No, wait, stop. It doesn't help you to think that way. You chose to finish the first year of university, then you took half a sabbatical year. Your partner from that first year of university is still your life partner, and since then you have gotten married. It's 4 years since your wedding, and your thoughts are starting to have their own life, it seems. They return more fiercely and more violently, and they all beckon you to answer the same question, the only question. Did you choose wrong? Where would your life have taken you if you had gone with that flirt on an adventure? Would you two even be together today? Probably not, and that is also a scary thought. You like who you are today, but by everything that's holy, you would give almost anything to have experienced that trip. Your life today consists of everyday tasks, work from 7:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. You get up, go through your tried routine, dinner, bedtime, sleep. Sometimes you can sneak in half an episode of your favorite series, or maybe read a little. Or you used to read. There is no time for that either now. Generally, you find that you do not have the time for everything, and you have realized that you certainly don't have time for a trip around the world as your life is today. That thought is unbearable because it's a result of the choices you made along the way. It would be so lovely if you could go back and choose differently. Your life right now is not that glamorous. It's just more of the same day after day. Come on, something needs to happen. You need to feel you're alive. The core of your grief or loss. You have gotten wiser and you have realized you chose wrong. It can't be undone, so you have to learn to live with your mistake. There is nothing to do but be angry with yourself because of your own stupidity. Coping mechanisms, daydreaming and absolutes. Your first coping mechanism is, I would have loved to. You use this sentence very often. You would have loved to have more time. You would have loved to be invited by your friends to attend things. Would have loved to rip out a year from your calendar and just travel. You would have loved if you could go back and change your decision. Your second coping mechanism is the role as a mentor. You are a quite reasonable and understanding individual. People ought to listen to you. You listen to the others in the group and propose solutions to their problems. You know what you are talking about, so your solutions are actually really good. You just need to is a sentence you use often to underline that you actually know what you're talking about. Your third coping mechanism is people need to stop whining. The more you think about life only going one way, and that's forward, the angrier you get. Nothing can be undone. Everything you do has a consequence. Nonsense. There is nothing that cannot be undone. Have you chosen the wrong partner? Leave them. You don't like your education? Change it. Stop whining and do something about it instead. Answer these questions in your head before going in-game. What is your name? What specific thought has occupied your mind recently? What feeling rummages in you as you walk through the door to the self-help group for the first time?